Hello and welcome to Culture with me, Robert Bound, where today we're asking what's next in TV. We'll be turning on our TV sets or laptops or tablets or whatever we're using these days to get our small screen entertainment and tuning them to the near future as we take a look at the technology, the regions and the writers who are dictating what we'll be watching and how we'll be watching it for the rest of the year and next year. And our expert on the matter is international editor of broadcast magazine Peter White, our favourite aficionado of the box. All that is coming up on Culture with me, Robert Bound, right here on Monocle 24. And on hand, I was going to say on hand as ever, that makes it sound like a cheap date. It's Peter White, international editor of Broadcast Magazine. Welcome to the studio, Pete.
Thanks, Rob. Always happy to be a cheap date.
And we're going to kind of cut this in two. We're going to talk first about some of the content, some of the programmes themselves, the genres and stuff, and then we're going to talk about the people that make them and some of the more international trends in formats and things. So let's kick off with some programmes. And then this is a really nice one, the kind of trend for time travel, which reading some of the stuff you wrote for our current issue, it makes really interesting reading the reason that it exists in the first place and why it's sort of what goes around comes around.
Yeah, absolutely.
Tell us about this one then.
Absolutely. It's a predominantly US trend at the moment. So all of the networks, or at least three of the major ones, have got time travel shows this year, a couple of dramas and a comedy. But speaking to people when they were making them, you know, asking why the three come at once when we haven't had one in many years, a few people could only point to Back to the Future being the October 2000.
Someone in a production meeting going, that's quite good, isn't it, Back to the Future? Should we do something like that?
It's the moment Michael J. Fox, you know, comes into the future and everyone thought, oh, that's a good idea. Maybe we should do a TV show like that. Which is fascinating because you sort of wonder what leads these development trends. And sometimes it's luck, sometimes it's coincidence, and sometimes people have been watching too much Back to the Future on old movie channels. So, yeah, there's a few shows. The biggest probably is the Sean Ryan produced show called Timeless for NBC, which is, it's a little bit cheesy. It's, you know, if you could kill Hitler as a baby type stuff.
Yeah.
But it's kind of fun. It's, you know, it's got the ye olde time. It's the sort of modern adventurer goes back to the future to try and save the world. So that's one of the big ones. There's a comedy called Making History, which is from the guys that made the Lego movie. That's a bit more of a sort of self-referential nod to, you know, piss-taking millennials.
Yeah.
So there's that. And then there's one after, it's called Time After Time, which is a sort of very serious H.G. Wells. You know, this sort of H.G. sort of follows, goes back into the future to try and stop murders. And it's sort of a Sherlock style.
It's got a bit of moralistic bent to it, perhaps.
Yeah, if you can remember how Johnny Lee Miller did Elementary instead of Benedict Cumberbatch's Sherlock, it's sort of like that. It's that kind of style.
Time After Time, it sort of sounds a bit like it might be an 80s sitcom starring Cruella Scales.
Yeah,
doesn't bode well.
No,
the name,
I'm surprised it wasn't on the latest BBC sitcom season that saw them bring back Goodnight Sweetheart. And,
yeah, right. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. It could well be. Give them an idea, actually.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if it's got Nicholas Lyndhurst in it, then who isn't game? Okay, so time travel and the reason that it exists is fairly amusing. Let's talk about Brazil, because this made interesting reading in the magazine, Peter. The fact that telenovelas, Globo, the big production companies, the big broadcasters in Brazil, they've been very kind of glittery curtain, I suppose you might say. And things seem to be getting grittier. Tell us about this.
Yeah, so in the past, Brazil's been known for the telenovela, the sort of long-running, slightly cheesy soap, essentially. It's a daytime soap but that we think of that plays in the evening, plays usually about 120 episodes. But a couple of years ago, the Brazilian government brought in some new content quotas, essentially trying to get people to make more local content rather than buying in shows, which has sort of had a nice impact for many of the broadcasters that you wouldn't necessarily think that make these kind of shows. Like TNT, which is a US cable network that has a channel out there, has got a gritty show called The Law. HBO, Latin America. And HBO, you know, does essentially the same thing that it does in the States in plenty of other territories. It does it in Eastern Europe and it does it in Asia. But this one, you know, they've got this show, this is called The Deal, and they've got a new psychoanalysis show as well. So they're really trying to sort of turn away from the telenovela, which doesn't really sell. It sells into a few places in Latin America and a couple of territories in the Middle East. But what they want is us to watch it in the West. And they really, you know, they want to be able to sell it and they want to be able to export it. So there's a slightly edgier, grittier movement movement. And that's right across the region, actually. A few other places like Mexico are trying to do the same thing, where they can actually export some of these shows and sell them to sort of premium cable networks.
And you mentioned two things I'd like to pick up on there. HBO kind of doing what it does there. Eastern Europe has been a big trend for HBO. What are we talking about here? Are we talking about on-screen talent? Are we talking about location? I know, obviously, every time you want to have a sword fight in a forest, it's sort of, you're contractually obliged to do it in Hungary or Romania or somewhere. What's this big subscription channel doing?
Yeah, they've got the production capability. You see Game of Thrones often films out there, and as you say, any sort of swashbuckling drama tends to use that. It looks very medieval, apparently. But actually, what HBO did a few years ago was they said, well, you know, we obviously make this great US content. Can we replicate that around the world? So it's their own local versions. And Central and Eastern Europe was sort of the first one that they started to do this with. It's a fellow called Anthony Root, actually a British TV guy, used to work at ITV. He's been taken over to try and make local shows. They want that edgy drama. They started with a few remakes of things like In Treatment, so they did their own versions in Poland and a couple of other countries. And now they've started to make their own drama, make their own, you know, from original writers, starring original talent. Burning Bush was the first one. I don't want to pronounce her name, but it's the director of The Wire and a few things, a local Hungarian woman who sort of kicked that off. It's sort of gritty, about a student back in the day, and it was sort of causing rebel trouble. And they've got some things like Wasteland is a big show out there. They've got a biker drama. So they're really trying to go for that slightly edgy style. And their style is not necessarily for it to export. They just want the audiences in that region to be able to sort of be proud of the shows in the same way as that the Americans are proud of Game of Thrones and those shows.
I mean, it seems like a natural fit, though, because those production centres, the locations. I mean, there's a lot of folklore, whether it's the West's understanding of what is only just the Eastern Bloc, whether it's you're talking about kind of communist era thing, I'm thinking about Deutschland 83, would have been such a natural fit to have had something like that based in Czechoslovakia or Hungary during that
period. Think of the stories.
Yeah, I mean, amazing stories.
You know, absolutely. And it has been plunged for their own local versions of, you know, over the years, obviously those channels do that. But I think there's a bit more. They've got the writers to come up with local stories. They're really trying to get into that mindset, as you say there. Great locations, incredible writers. And actually, I mean, you know this from the film side of things, that, you know, Eastern European directors over the years have been brilliant. But what's tended to happen is that once they make a local hit or a film that does well, then they get sort of taken into the Hollywood machine.
Yeah.
So what some of these places like HBO are trying to do is say, actually, why don't you make stuff there? It's, you know, incredible budgets for compared to what the terrestrial broadcasters would allow, so that they can, you know, essentially try and make their equivalents. And they really want that, you know, their Wire or their you know, Band of Brothers, whatever it is, but, you know, using that local talent. And it's paid off. And, you know, I mean, they're a commercial organisation. It makes them a lot of money as well as keeps their viewers happy.
Finally, then, let's, while we're on the subject of content, what we're actually going to see on screens all over the world at the end of this year and I suppose next, then, Peter, let's talk about the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
You've mentioned this before. We've talked about it many times in the studio. Israel was the sort of format powerhouse, wasn't it, of the last 10 years or so. And now the other Middle Eastern countries, the Arab countries, are sort of hitting back.
Absolutely.
Tell us about this.
Absolutely. They've seen what Israel's done. You said that prisoners of war, you know, what we had two films, as it's known locally, was such a huge success that some of these other countries, whether it's Libya, the UAE, have thought, well, we can do that. You know, they've got lots of money, and they've got this incredible resource that they can actually do. There's a show being made by one of the LA law writers there called Heart of Justice, which is a sort of long-running legal crime drama. And yeah, they've sort of seen that, you know, if Israel can do it, so can we. It's very nascent. You know, there's not a lot coming out of that isn't local, that doesn't necessarily transport. But actually, they're starting to make waves. And given that they have the money and they seemingly drawing in production expertise from elsewhere to help them with that push, you can't see why not. You know, why couldn't the UAE be the new Israel? We're always desperate to find out, you know, where's the new Holland, or, you know, is Korea the new Israel? So, you know, these guys are trying to get in on the act, and why not?
There is, of course, that editorial prerogative where you have to go, it's all right, but what's the new this? Everyone wants to know what the new something is. It's actually the new something's the old something. It's the same place. You're like, it's not good enough.
I get asked that question every 3 months.
You know,
where's the new XXX? And it's like, well, TV doesn't always, you know, work as quick as that. But, you know, if you look over the years, you know, we wouldn't have been discussing Israel a few years ago. So, and I think you look at some of the foreign language dramas, that they tend to travel better now than they ever have done, which just means that people know that they can make a bit of their money back. So they can, you know, if you can get awards, if you can get it onto Channel 4 or the BBC and some of these these things. And then absolutely, you know, it's and in the States, you know, you can sell this stuff to the Netflixes of the world, whereas we didn't ever have that before when you're talking about these platforms. You know, there was only four channels and they weren't going to buy it. So now with all this foreign language drama, there's an absolute goldmine.
And we should let our listeners know that this program is, of course, available with subtitles. Should we talk about platforms, Peter? Mm. Well, we are going to talk about platforms. We're going to talk about all sorts of exciting things, including Apple's kind of land grab of content as much as the platforms on which you watch it. But first, we're going to talk, I mean, you talked in the magazine about Nigeria's Netflix-esque
try saying that
service,
a few times.
I know, called Iroko TV. Yeah. This is in Nigeria. So you can give us a bit of a background to it, maybe here, and then we're gonna play an interview in a sec. So what are we talking about with Iroko?
Yeah, it's an online platform. It's a subscription video on demand service. And Netflix, you know, has been slow to move into many territories. It's only recently done that in the last few months to go outside of the major markets. So there was a bit of a gap. And a platform like this, you know, they've got some great original content. Lekki Wives and Husbands of Lagos are these sort of local stories. You know, they're not too dissimilar to a sort of dramatic version of Made in Chelsea or so much. But, they've started paying quite a decent fee. You know, Nigeria's always been known for its film industry. You know, Nollywood is... Mm. I think pumps out more films than anywhere else in the world just by, you know, pure hours. So they've thought, well, hold on, given that TV's the new film, and why can't we do this with the television business? And it does seem to be paying off. I mean, it's, you know, it's early days, but, you know, there's some interesting stuff going on there.
Nice. Well, it sounds like the perfect moment to queue up an interview with the CEO of Iroko TV. This is Fernando Augusto Pacheco speaking to Jason Njoku.
Jason, a pleasure to have you here on the show. Can you tell us a bit more about the concept of Iroko TV?
So back in 2010, there was a movie industry based out of Nigeria. Colloquially, it was called Nollywood. You know, there's 180 million people in Nigeria. It's one in every five black people in the world. Very vibrant, loads of color, loads of languages, loads of culture. They created a movie industry specifically for themselves. In 2010, that movie industry was largely consumed locally. Being born and bred in the UK, in London, when I happened across it, I kind of felt that there was a big opportunity to bring this content and bring it around the world. When I spoke to people in Nigerian communities in London, in Manchester, in New York, and other parts around the world, I kind of gathered that there was definitely some opportunity to connect those people with content that they love. So 2010, I sort of started on a journey which essentially crystallized itself as an Iroko. And Iroko TV, which essentially just leads people to Nigerian content that we hope they will love.
Yeah, fantastic. And, you know, it's interesting as well because it's not something only for Nigerians, actually. You're planning this to go to other countries as well, right? That was always part of the plan, correct?
One thing about Nollywood is that it's been very, very well received around the world, but primarily around, like, African and her diaspora. What's interesting, again, is that back in 2010-11, there were very few actual avenues outside of Nigeria to actually watch Nollywood content. So all we've done is married this, you know, amazingly popular content and her communities via, like, the democratizing effect of the internet. So we took the best distribution tool in the world, connected with some great content. So whether you're in Jamaica, whether you're in India, Australia, Malaysia, if there's a Nigerian community, you can definitely tap into some of your, like, local content and really have a sense and feel closer to home.
You produce also original content, I believe. If you could tell us a bit more about that.
Yeah, so over the last 3 or 4 years, you know, our view was that as obviously we're internet people, we obsess about data, we try and anticipate what and why people watch content, there isn't a big theatrical window in Nollywood, so the ability to determine what are the big releases based on, like, box office numbers, etc., doesn't exist. So we're only after Bollywood. In India, Nollywood produces an excess of 2,000 movies. So to enable to us to actually keep on making sure we're at the forefront of the amazing content, it made sense for us to try and start to influence them. So initially we started co-producing. Over the years, as we've become more confident in our decision-making, we've been able to now extend to the point where we have an in-house studio. They produce a lot of content. This year they'll produce about 50% of the content that we have on and in our service, and we expect that to be at least 85% by 2018. And again, like, our ambition, our mission, our very reason for being is to lead people to content they love. So the content is key. We're content people, and anything we can do to finance beautiful, amazing content, you know, we're game for that.
Excellent. And final question, what's your most popular show or one of the most popular shows at the moment?
So one of our most popular shows at the moment is something called Husbands of Lagos. And again, it's a group of guys, different characters, different experiences, and around like what are the typical comedic but at the same time quite dramatic things which happen to like husbands in Lagos. It was actually born out of my wife and I when we were having our first child. You know, I was complaining about having to like massage her feet and go halfway across town to get stuff that she wanted. So I kind of said I was going to build like a support group for husbands in Lagos who obviously have pregnant wives. And that kind of sort of like crystallized that idea of, you know what, there are different kinds of husbands. Let's try and capture that into a comedy, but sort of like dramatic representation of them. And that's doing incredibly well at the moment. We're about to release the new season in October.
Cool. That was Fernando Augusto Pacheco talking to the CEO of Iroko TV, Jason Njoku. So this isn't the only region to roll out its own platform. Man Bang is a new bit of kit that's been released in North Korea and has been dubbed as the country's equivalent of Netflix, which might be a little misleading, as Alice Vincent, arts and entertainment writer for the Daily Telegraph, told Paul Osborne on the Monocle Daily recently.
It's being called sort of the North Korean Netflix, and that's a bit of a misnomer, really. It's actually a sort of somewhere between an internet TV streaming service and a video on demand service, but the choice of your programming is very small. There is no original programming here.
So there is a recognition from the North Korean regime here that video on demand, this is something you can't ignore, that this huge switch that people want more content they wanted at home. There are two problems. You can't get online in most of North Korea. Firstly, because the government doesn't want you to.
Right.
Secondly, because even when you can, the internet moves slightly slower than a tortoise.
Yeah, exactly. It is inherently flawed. Number one, as you say, the connectivity is very poor. But secondly, is that it's a really complicated bit of kit. I mean, in a Western household, we're used to plugging all sorts of things into HDMI ports and modems and connecting it to the grid, but this is a completely different situation. It's a really fancy bit of kit for houses that are not remotely equipped to deal with it.
Now, you know, we know all about things like the Great Firewall of China and all this kind of thing, but if you're going to improve the internet infrastructure in North Korea enabled to deliver these services, you're inevitably inviting people to start looking for things that you'd rather they didn't see to the outside world.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's where it feels like this kind of man bang might not quite work out as it sounds through the mixed messages and lost in translation. There are some reports saying that this will help the connectivity issues, but in reality, it's a means of making sure that these propaganda films are being able to be shown all the time.
Is there a culture in North Korea of making, rather than those, we always see North Korean television as furious denunciations on the news and people shouting? Is there a more subtle way of doing this, some more entertaining anti-American, anti-capitalist films that you could make? I mean, we know that the first family of North Korea are film buffs.
Right, right. Yeah, I think the thing is the first family of North Korea have a very different access to things than everyone else in North Korea. This is the whole thing with Man Bang. We've seen a few videos, we've seen a few stills. Ultimately, while Netflix is for, you know, 190 countries... Man Bang is literally for one, and that is North Korea. We have no idea what's on there. There are weird reports of like orphanages saying that now their orphans can watch stuff on repeat, but it might all just be completely made up by KCTV, who are behind the whole thing.
And there are possibly more creative ways of doing this. I remember that East Germany used to schedule big Hollywood films at the exact same time as the news on West German television,
right,
in a desperate effort to stop people turning over to get the news from West Germany. So
right,
they would, well, you could, yes, you could watch the imperialist news, or you could watch Butch Cassidy and the Sundance. I mean, that might be one way to do
this. That's one way to do it. Maybe that is how they'll do it, you know, something infinitely more appealing than the alternative.
The North Korean Netflix doesn't honestly sound massively appealing.
No, not when, as you say, for sort of $6.99 a month, you can get Breaking Bad until your eyes glaze over in front of the screen, yeah.
Which, to my absolute shame and regret, I have still never actually even started to watch. But I suppose that's the problem with infinite choice, which
exactly
won't necessarily be much of a problem in North Korea with the five channels.
Probably
and
not
the Russian language lessons.
Yeah.
That was Alice Vincent, arts and entertainment writer at The Telegraph, and Monocle presenter Paul Osborne talking about Man Bang. Don't Google it at work. I promised listeners, Peter, to talk about Apple. Mm-hmm. It seems like they probably, you know, take 2 cents of every dollar everybody spends in the world. In what ways are they going to find new ways to do that in 2017, I wonder?
Absolutely. It's interesting that they've started to move into TV in a big way. I think everyone expected them to move in a sort of platform way, where they would take over your living room and do that, whereas they were taking other channels. But it turns out they're actually going to start producing some of their own original content. Carpool Karaoke, which is the sort of hit viral segment that James Corden does in the States, he does it on his CBS talk show. They're making a long form version of that, and it's a multi-part, you know, 16 episodes apparently, and they're going big into that. It's a, you know, huge. That was a show that every broadcaster in America and around the world would have liked to have had. They're going to do it worldwide. They're going to do it through their Apple Music app, so you're going to sort of watch it through your, you know, you can watch it on your laptop, but also on your phone. And they've started to do a few other things. There's a rumour that there's a Dr. Dre drama in development, given that he's sort of linked to the company.
Beats and all the rest of it,
Beats,
right?
And the such. Yeah. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see if they actually turn out, you know, you look at what Netflix and Amazon have done with their original stuff over the last couple of years. You know, Netflix has got like 600 hours, and that really only started with House of Cards. So it'll be interesting to see whether Apple sort of replicates that or whether they do sort of slightly more music-based things. But, you know, it's just a start at the moment, and then that's going to launch next year. And as you joke, you know, as Apple is such a, you know, we all own an iPhone or an iMac or whatever it is. They've got access to us, so, you know, chuck a few more quid on there. There's no reason why they can't turn that into TV and turn a small screen.
And I guess they're kind of entering that market which Netflix and Amazon are now big players in. We mentioned the freedom that Netflix has given to writers and producers and actually territories, I suppose, in getting subtitled drama or drama that's difficult to make, stuff like Narcos, I suppose, putting that on those channels. How do you gauge the strength of both those sort of parties in the battle in 2017, I suppose? Because they're really set against each other,
yeah,
it seems, aren't
they? They are, although they're slightly different stages. If you think that Amazon's sort of taken a little bit longer than Netflix. Netflix, big challenge, you know, they make over sort of 600-700 hours of original content. You know, every Friday there seems to be a new hit show. You know, Narcos, yeah, second season just launched this weekend. The challenge for Netflix is now trying to actually get people around the world to watch that. They've struggled a little bit with subscriber growth in the last few months because there's a feeling that the hit everywhere that wants to get Netflix. I mean, you know, everyone's heard of it now, so it's a case of how next? And they've started to do that with other niches. They're moving into kids' content in a big way and trying to get teenagers interested. They've, you know, got a lock on the edgy drama, but now, yeah, if you're a TV channel, you have to broaden out and you have to have shows that, you know, rom-coms and everything else, you know, Adam Sandler movies, if you like. Amazon is in a, as I say, a slightly different situation because it really is only available in a few territories. It's available in the States and the UK and Germany and Japan. So their next challenge is really to try and get the service out to other countries so that they can get their shows. I mean, you know, they do some great original shows like Transparent and such, and their big new show is the Jeremy Clarkson format, The Grand Tour, which, you know.
And talking about distribution with that, I mean, the great success of that for the BBC was that it was bought by 60 countries.
Oh,
or
even,
more,
even more,
or
yeah,
whatever it was.
Yeah.
So how does that work with a big name like Jeremy Clarkson and then it being on a place where you can only watch it in four countries?
Yeah, I mean, so Amazon's going to use that show to roll out around the world. They've already started talking. I think they've confirmed the France launch in India as well. And then they're just going to go quickly. It's essentially, they can, you know, Amazon's in every country as a local service, you know, retail. So there's no reason why can't they just sort of switch that plug on. And that's what they're going to do, as you say. So Top Gear, the Clarkson format, was in nearly 200 territories and they had local versions in many places. So what Amazon's, they're spending a lot of money for Jeremy, but actually they know they'll get a great show that will be a hit in the UK and the States, which will get them a lot of buzz. But they also know that he's a familiar face that when you want to go and launch in Lithuania or Asia or Australia, people are going to pay for that to actually get that show. That's going to be the sort of marker. In the same way as House of Cards was the marker for Netflix, they're banking on Jeremy Clarkson.
Nice seeing Jeremy Clarkson's face as the maitre d' of every television visual restaurant in
just,
the world.
Just make sure he's had lunch.
Oh, it's tough, isn't it? You have to get up early to get one over on Peter White. We've got time for one more thing in terms of platforms and all the rest of it, and this is games. This is esports, computer games, essentially, on the television.
Yes.
Some people will be unfamiliar with kind of what this is. So let's go right back to basics. Is this watching people playing computer games on the TV?
Yes.
Is this?
Okay. Yes, pretty much. It's a concept that people under the age of 25 don't really know. But yeah, it's a huge thing. They have these, nothing to do with the television. Esports is a huge franchise. You know, there's leagues all around the world, particularly in the States, where it's big computer game competitions. So they've just filmed them. And what they've done is put them on, they start putting them on digital screens because it started really as a YouTube thing and online. But actually, if you're trying to reach that 16 to 34 year old audience that doesn't really particularly turn on its television screen, or if in fact own one, this is the way that they can do that. So Legends of Gaming, for instance, is the big one that's been turned into about 7 territories. And they think they can roll that out around the world. There's going to be lots of different competitions. I think we haven't quite seen what is the big brand in esports yet, but there's a few that are knocking around. Turner owns a stake in one, and so does Sky over here. So yeah, it is just watching people play computer games, but apparently it's, you know, fascinating, and that's the future apparently.
We'll just hold our noses and we'll just jump in the deep end, right?
Absolutely.
That's the only way to do it.
We'll get the Monocle esports gaming league started.
It's only a matter of time, Pete. Look at my thumbs. They used to look like thumbs. Now they're just stumps. Thank you very much indeed to Peter White, who's the international editor of Broadcast Magazine. Of course, I'm sorry for calling him a cheap date at the beginning of the programme. He's far from it. Although I didn't have to light a candle. All I did was turn down the lights here in Studio 2.
I didn't even get dinner.
And you didn't even get dinner. But thank you very much indeed, Peter, for talking us through, I guess, the high days and the holidays and the highlights of what we might be watching and how we might be watching it in 2017. And that brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you very much to Peter, of course. Don't forget you can read his article on TV trends in the current edition of Monocle. You've been listening to Culture, where my producers were Holly Fisher and Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Join me at the same time next week. But for the time being, I've been Robert Bounds, and thank you very much for tuning in.